part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Shall we begin the podcast? The interview? Now that Greg has been able to join us. Should I say Greg or Gregory?
Which Greg do you prefer? Greg is good.
Because people ask me Chris or Christian, and I'm like, Christian. Chris is another name. I like Christian. So Greg is fine?
Yeah, Greg is fine.
All right. Awesome. Well, this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And my name is Christian Horn, as always, and I have two very distinguished guests with me. I have Travis Webb and Gregory. Can I use your middle initial in this? Gregory.
You can.
Greg K. Smith on the podcast. And you, let's just jump to the chase as we always do with Kickstarters. You both have a Kickstarter currently running, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yes, and why don't you tell people a little bit about your Kickstarter? Because let's just cut to the chase, because we want money and we want people to throw money at this thing.
Yes, please, throw the money.
Throw all the money.
All right, Travis, how should we start?
What is your elevator pitch?
I literally spaced out for a second because right when you guys were talking, a picture of Animal Crossing appeared on my screen. I was like, oh, wait, are we talking?
So I see that Travis is easily distracted. Let's just put it that
way. Yeah. Easily distracted Travis with his Animal Crossing.
Sounds great. Calling from the... Oh, wait. Hold on a second. Something... Oh, no. One of you speak? I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. No, I am recording both of us. All right. I thought there was a glitch for a second. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. That would have been embarrassing. Such a great introduction would have been wasted. Anyway.
Travis spacing out is the best introduction.
Yeah, Travis. Well, Travis, I don't know if Travis wants to talk about it at all, but we were talking about kind of like what he has been going through. Which is not as well, is just as interesting, maybe more interesting than your Kickstarter, but not because with the current state of events. But anyway, so let's talk about the Kickstarter. What is it? Well, I'll just say it's called Starlight, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And it is LITE, not LIGHT, correct?
Yeah. Correct.
So when people go to Kickstarter, that's what they should search for. You go to Kickstarter.com and you look up Starlight and then you just throw it as much money as you can. Correct?
Yes. Yes. All the monies. Angel investors, welcome.
All There you go.
Yes.
Why don't we let the people know? Travis, what do you do? And Greg, what do you do on the book?
So we're both writers.
Okay.
And I was a writing consultant, and I'm still a technical writer for large scale business stuff. So
nice.
Like right now, I'm writing for Microsoft.
Oh, okay.
I've written for a lot of really big companies. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, the overlords.
Which is what we're using, so your employer should be happy. Skype, yes.
Anyway. Yeah, I did write some documentation for another company on Skype, and that meant, because, you know, they were using Skype, so they needed documentation for their own employees,
gotcha,
because the Microsoft documentation was so...
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, okay. And so you're both writers. And Gregory, what do you want to expand a little bit more on what you do?
All right. So I work on the children's book series, the graphic novel series, Junior Braves of the Apocalypse. It's put out by Oni Press.
Oh, okay.
And it's set here in the Seattle Pacific Northwest area. Uh-huh. And it's about a group of kids that go off on a wilderness trip and then come back to town, and their town is overrun by a mutant zombie infestation, and they have to find their folks, figure out what's going on, and fight off the zombies. It's kind of apropos that it's happening in Seattle, the Seattle area. And it's an apocalyptic situation in which they're not sure of what's going on, and trying to figure it out, and all the adults are gone. But Also, I worked on a few other Kickstarters. I've written a number of short stories and have been a writing and technical advisor on other stories and edited for, let's see, Cthulhu's Hard to Spell.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're familiar with that Kickstarter, yeah, out of Russell Dudley's book series, I worked on some stories, story in there. I worked on Monsters and Other Shit, other scary shit. I had a few stories in there. I worked on the Kickstarter as a writing consultant and media consultant for the Blood and Gourd series. So if you're familiar with their horror series, it's been out about 3 issues so far. Had Frank Gamboa doing art, colors, and most recently a couple other artists and whatnot working on that fantastic project. So it's been fun working on those things, but this is definitely a dream come true to be able to work with my friend Travis and our friend Brett on something that we've been talking about for a while.
sure. And so Starlight, I found the concept like really, you messaged me via Twitter, which I was lucky to see it because I hate Twitter. I can't stand
I'm not
Twitter.
The only one.
Yeah. I'm not a big Twitter fan, but as people will know, if you look at all my social media feeds, they are not very populated because I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I have enough time doing this podcast and making my own like little side comics. So basically, but no, I was very happy that you contacted me because I read the description of the project and I was like, huh, that sounds interesting, because especially growing up in like LA, I mean, not growing up, excuse me, I grew up in New Jersey and New York, but I live in LA, Los Angeles, and it very much sort of like had this kind of not showbiz feel, but sort of like influenced by kids who were like, say, child actors, I would say. It reminded me a little bit of that. Am I sort of close in my...
Yeah, you're dead on. I think that's when Travis was coming up with this and threw it in my direction, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so real and whimsical at the same time. It's like it's a story that anyone could go, oh yeah, I totally understand that, but at the same time, yeah, give me more of those space cats.
Yeah. So why don't you give us the elevator pitch? Because we haven't gotten into that. What's the elevator pitch for Starlight?
Travis.
Oh, nice. Give him the hard job.
Usually I'm the over-talkative one. I was just like sitting back thinking, man, Greg's got the reins on this.
I got the reins on it.
I can sit here and watch Animal Crossing videos.
So I don't need to work.
All right. So we got 2 ex-child superheroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just lost my own elevator pitch. Right. I thought Greg was going to do it. All right. And then I was going to try to make fun of him.
All right. 2 ex-child superheroes.
Yeah.
They are kidnapped by space cat pirates for their interdimensional spider wizard overlords.
So they lost their powers after they
were
kids.
That was a spoiler, Greg.
Oh crap.
Actually, we've never mentioned why they were kidnapped.
Do I need to cut that out?
Yeah, maybe beep that part for us. It'll make your podcast more interesting, and because he really just blew the load on that one.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I'll beep it out. I'll try and like beep. I've never beeped anything out, but I'll beep that out if you really
just
want me to.
A bunch of beepity beep beeps.
Beepity. Yeah. People will think that Gregory has a foul mouth, but instead he was just spoiling his own series.
It'd be funny because I'm the one with the children's. I write the children's books, and I'm such a nice boy.
That's so funny. Oh, that's great. So basically, when you say child superheroes, like what sort of age are we talking about? Like how old were so you've got 2 protagonists, you're saying, right? And they were both kids superheroes. Are we talking like 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, or child endangerment age?
Endangerment age.
What are we talking
about?
Brother
and sister. Yeah. They were 5 and 7, which is also what makes it interesting because, you know, when you're 5, you don't really remember anything from before being 5. So imagine if your older brother, who's 7, who seems like an adult to you, because when you're 5, 7 seems like adulthood.
Sure.
Right? You know, you guys get superpower. You're just trying to hang out and do what he does. Then you get to be whisked along to the idea of secret identities, but it's real, you know, and you have superpowers and you fight real supervillains with other real superheroes. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, by the way, you're preteens now. And the rest of your life, you're just going to be ordinary.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So is this sort of a thing just relative to these two characters, or is it also, I mean, I think you said there were adult superheroes. So is it, the world has adult superheroes, or do kids like lose their powers? Like, or is that spoiling the story too much as well?
A little bit of both.
We can't talk about the story at all, Christian. Like, it's just gonna be
so sorry,
secret.
Christian. Thanks for having us on. We have to. We cut.
Beep, 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 beep.
Exactly.
It's exclusive, non-exclusive at the same point, because we don't know exactly what happens in the world. At any given point, right? To any character or any person, living or not living.
Okay.
So here's an easy way to put it. If I can jump, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Greg. I feel like
go ahead.
Okay, so here's the way the thing is: yes, there are superheroes in their world, right? And that was the first reason there was a lot of like no from Travis's end. Mm-hmm. I don't want to help with the book or write a book with, you know, that's another Watchmen, Umbrella Academy. This all sounded bad to me.
Okay.
You know, like I've read The Boys. I don't need to write it. You know,
sure.
It's something that actually bothers me is when I want to look for ways to get us out of that and still ask the same questions. So the question is, you know, how do you cope with being a superhero with superpowers and not being able to be a superhero anymore, and do that story in something new and original that hasn't been done to death in the last 10 years?
Sure.
I mean, heck, if you pick up a regular DC comic, right? Even Booster Gold has reality, what superheroes were real, going on in the storylines.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's invaded comic books in such a manner. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's just already a lot of that. So yeah. We were like, let's just get away from this. So I was like, I'll tell you the story. Is Brett actually said, why don't we do the story that you talked to me about years ago with the Raver Kid and stuff? And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do it about raves. Like, I don't want any raves in it. And he's like, yeah. I really like the character. I like the concept. I'm like, well, I'll do it if we can have space pirate cats and transdimensional aliens. And he goes, okay, I'll draw that.
Okay.
He was like staring at me like, is he serious?
Wait. So this is the artist? It seems like the way Travis works is that he blackmails people into working with, like, he's like, I'll do this, but I won't do that. We'll do this, but I won't do that. Is that how the partnership works, Gregory? I keep calling you Gregory. I should call you Greg. Greg.
No, it's totally fine. It's totally fine. Because, So for the listeners out there, I live with my grandmother, and she calls me Gregory all the time.
Okay.
It's one of those things. So Travis and Brett's partnership going into it from the artist and writer's perspective on that side, there was a lot of that discussion going on. And then when Travis brought me in and he was like, hey, I need help. And I was like, wait, what? You want me to help you?
Uh-huh.
But you do that. You help everyone else. And because that's usually his thing. You know, he's the guy that fixes other people's things. And he was like, I need you to look at this and tell me what you think. And I was like, OK, sure. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, by the way, we're working on this now.
Oh, wow. So we didn't mention who the artist was. Why don't you say that? Because you've been talking about blackmailing him into drawing space cats, or that he blackmailed you, or I kind of wasn't clear on who blackmailed who, but who is the artist on this book?
Travis.
It's Brett Wedeli.
Yes! Oh my gosh, you said the name correctly. Oh,
I've known the guy for 10 years, man. I've never gotten his name right.
Oh, and it's a Travis. Monumental occurrence on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast.
Woo. Yeah. So Brett, Oh, good.
I said I didn't have to correct you. That was the first.
Man, I've known Brett. So I was with a major agency down in Hollywood as a fixer, kind of a writing consultant. They would bring in to punch and stuff. I was working on a much like the biggest project at the time. I thought it was like my big break it. You know what I'm saying? Like I was down in Hollywood all the time meeting these famous people, and they're like, hey, we need some art done. Can you find an artist? And I got introduced to Brett.
Okay.
And so Brett was just coming off the heels of the movie Surrogates, which was his book.
Yeah.
With Bruce Willis.
Okay.
So he's an Eisner nominated New York Times bestselling author and, you know, just a great artist. And so he was just coming off that. So we got to work for a while on this big project that was supposed to go become a big movie with a major producer. And like 90%, like people don't realize this, 90% of the stuff that sounds like it's going to happen in Hollywood goes nowhere.
Okay.
It's mind blowing. Art sits for 8 to 10 years in developmental.
Yeah.
You know? And so 10 years ago, I think maybe longer now, my brain's starting to fizzle out, but you know, Brett and I met and we became good friends. So over the years, talked about it, but I was always like wandering off like, well, I'm gonna go work on this guy's screenplay for him.
No. One day,
you know, and Brett was like, you know, you need to stop doing that and you need to go get your own IP. And he's like, because that's just killing your career. And I was like, oh. So that's when he brought up the story, and I'll be honest, this will make it funnier because Grace and a laugh. We were at Burning Man, so I don't know what kind of mood I was in when I suggested Space Pirate Cats and Transdimensional Spider Wizards, but we were definitely at Burning Man when I thought of the idea.
Yeah. So,
and he was just, I think we were both wearing giant fur hats, laying on a giant bed that had a Mazda Miata underneath it so it could drive around and have orgy. Fun.
Yeah, wow. So you came up with this idea of Burning Man, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. The transdimensional spider wizards and space pirate cats, yes.
Okay. No, go ahead.
The actual idea I had years ago, and it was a back and forth idea that I told Brett about that didn't go anywhere with a major comic book publisher at the time.
Okay. And so you were sort of like your career was basically fixing other people's projects, or is that
forever
the sort of thing that you've been doing?
Yeah, forever. Like, I had an agent, and there's a whole underground world, and the WGA is trying to fix it now, address this. But a lot of times, an agent and some managers, especially agents, will get writers in, and they're like hip pocket guys, right? So they have bigger clients than that writer, and so does the agency, right?
Okay.
And what will happen is they'll bring these writers in with, you know, the promise, oh yeah, we're working for you. Here's the screenplay, fix it, but we can't put your name on it this one this time because of this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, okay, whatever, give me a check for $10,000.
Sure.
And they do.
Sure.
And they give you a check for 10 grand, and you sign an NDA so the union never knows, and you get no credit. So I did that. I did that with like a lot of writers, and I'm probably going to get myself burned out of the WGA by admitting that. But, you know, nobody knew. Now, side note on that, you know, people are always like, oh, 10 writers worked on this movie. That must have been a huge problem, right? And it just seems like all movies now have 10 writers.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There was always 10 writers on films before.
Sure.
The WGA started cracking down in the last few years.
Oh,
so you can't, as an agent, go do what was happening to me.
Oh, okay. So, because that's sort of that was always the big when I would read screenwriting books, like when I was younger. It was like, oh, if you have more than like one or two writers, like the screenplay will come out and be disastrous, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen and that sort of thing. And it's weird because I've noticed like particular like superhero movies, maybe Marvel movies, ones that have been sort of successful, or even animated movies, you're starting to see more and more writers like on the credits. And I'm like, geez, how many people wrote this thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, usually there's one writer. And then everybody else, like, there'll be a guy they'll bring in who's just really good at one character's dialogue, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
And before that guy, no one had ever known he'd work on it. Okay. And he may never go anywhere in Hollywood. He'll work on 50 films, and he'll never go anywhere in Hollywood because he'll never get a credit. And, you know, years later, he works as a technical writer for Microsoft or something, you know?
Sure. Trying to figure out how to work Skype. Yeah. No, so that's really fascinating to me. And during that period, was that something like, obviously you were good at it, right? Or you're a good writer. So, you know, how do you develop into a career like that? Because that's kind of like fascinating. Is that something that's, it's just like becomes easy to sort of like collect a paycheck and it just was easy for you to do?
You know, here's the difference between getting a real writing gig, like, you know, with credit and everything, and doing the consulting. I'm using consulting to not say the more derogatory term, but you get 10 grand up front.
Yeah. Okay.
And in your head, you're thinking, man, I helped make that.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that in some one particular NDA I remember in particular signing to this day, kind of weirds me out, was the director came out and flew out to meet me in person. Like, you know, his agent and my agent were like, hey, man, go out and hang out with Travis at his house for a day and just let him work with you and teach you. Sure. So the guy flew out here. I met him. It was great. I signed an NDA. And in the NDA, the director and I were both like, this NDA says we can't even acknowledge each other at conventions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, like, I've seen him at conventions, at panels since, and he sees me, but we do not acknowledge each other to this day for 10 years.
You mean, like, you can't even talk to each other and be like, hey, nope. What's up?
Not in public.
That's insanity. Like, he doesn't. So you're saying, like, not even that he has to say, like, hey, we work together. Like, he can't even be like, this is my friend Travis, or I know Travis, or Travis and I are cool. Like, he can't do any of that?
No. And that NDA happened, I think. I was thinking about that later, too. That was a weird experience when it happened.
Yeah.
First, that he flew out here, but second, that was in there. But then I was thinking about it later. That's about the time I think the WGA started to crack down.
Oh, okay.
And we started seeing the writer numbers come up. So I'm wondering if there's some, you know, I wouldn't know because I wasn't part of that conversation. But I wonder between the agents, they're like, we got to make sure for sure we don't get caught on this, because that film was already in production when they were having me come in.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, as fascinating as I find all this we could talk about that sort of thing forever. And I do have writer friends who could probably tell me more about that sort of thing too. But let's talk about Greg. How did you guys meet? Like, how do you know each other?
So we have some mutual friends. That introduced us at conventions. And oddly enough, I think Brett and I met at a Goonies convention anniversary a few years back. And and then when we're at Emerald City, I don't know, how many years ago was it again, Travis? A couple years, like, I mean, literally like years now, handfuls of years now, like, a mutual friend was like, you all should go to dinner together. We're all going to dinner. And we all ended up at dinner and just, I don't know, we've been pretty much like a convention crew that we just hang out, do stuff. Travis and I go down to San Diego every year, usually.
Nice.
And, you know, travel around.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But you were a writer as well? Is that something that you were?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because obviously you've got sort of credits and comic stuff, and so you were writing comics and that sort of how.
So my background is we're kind of, the three of us are like the comics Hollywood misfits, if you will. My writing partner on Junior Braves, Mike Tanner, and I both had been writing and competing in the Slam Dance Film Festival and the writing side of that for multiple years, and had been finalists and semifinalists, and finally gotten our, invitation to the party, if you will, right before the writer's strike happened. So we're sitting there meeting all the producers and directors and stuff like that for various things, and getting shown around and doing the meet and greets and stuff. And then all of a sudden the writer's strike happens, and no one in the industry wanted to meet with us after, talk to us. Everyone had either left or moved on to other places, like Canada or out of the country, to go film and work on the projects for the next like 3 to 7 months. So we were kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're just going to go back to our normal day jobs, whatever. Uh-huh. I went off to be a professional clown, and Mike went off to go do what he does. So, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, through random situations and other things, we were given a great opportunity to pitch the Junior Braves story. So, and that was also something coming out of a mutual friend of Mike's leaving the Hollywood scene and going to work in comics, who he'd known for years, and not knowing what he did in Hollywood and not knowing that he was into comics or working in comics. And then he ends up being Charlie Chu, working at Oni Press and becoming the guy that's being an editor and then moving through the editorial ranks and then handling all their development and other stuff. Nice. Later on or in the current right now. So, and working our projects that we have going on. So it's kind of, it's been an interesting 10 years.
So have both of you always been into comics? Like, it's because it sounds like you were both sort of like in Hollywood or LA or trying to make movies and that sort of thing. And it, more often than not, I get like Kickstarter creators or any kind of creator on this podcast. And they're very much like, yeah, I had a script. Yeah, I wanted to make movies. Yeah, I wanted to make TVs. But hey, I decided to turn it into a comic and hopefully that'll become a movie and that sort of thing. Is this the same sort of thing where it's very much like, hey, I had an idea for a movie and we're making it into a comic? Or did you always love comics, like that sort of thing?
So for me, like, I've always been into comics. Comics were, I'm dyslexic, so reading for me was always difficult. My dad threw me a bunch of comic books when I was a kid and was like, read these because you'll be able to like put the story together. So yeah. I learned through visual storytelling, and he grabbed me up like every single comic book that was like a book based on whatever they were reading in school. So if it was Gulliver's Travels, it was the Gulliver's Travels like comic book. And okay. That's how I did my book reports and stuff like that to get through elementary school. And
that's great.
So like growing up and hitting the spinner racks at every store that I could find and finding everything that in every like 25 cent bin and stuff like that was like a weekend excursion for me and what I looked forward to. Always did I want to make comics, but I'm not a good artist. I tried to get art school. I was told that I was like the worst thing you want to hear from a teacher or a mentor is like how bad you are at something.
Oh, wow.
And I was told like in college, like, why are you even wasting our time? You have the ability of like a kindergartner. And
no,
I was like,
no way, really?
Learn. Yeah. So I was like, I guess I'll go and like do something different. Like go take a TV and film studies class. So that's how I ended up like doing all the, like the screenwriting stuff.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. So. Those teachers are horrible people. I mean, you're going there to learn. I mean, I've had art teachers say things to me that, you know, are very, and I've told other art teachers, oh yeah, this art teacher told me once, and they're like, oh my God, what a horrible teacher. So I'll say the same thing about those people. They're horrible teachers. You're there to learn.
Well, and the funny part was like a different art teacher, like at the school, like saw me do a bunch of graffiti one day and was like, oh, if I knew that you could do that, then I would have took you into graphic design and shown you how to actually turn that into something you could do. And I was like, cause I was just out there like just bombing on walls and stuff like that when I was in my early days.
Oh, wow.
You know? And like, I gave that up because you don't want to get arrested for it. That's for sure. So kids, don't spray paint on walls. It's bad.
Sure. Sure. But, sure. Just let Greg do it for you.
No. Young Greg.
Young Greg. What about you, Travis? Were you always into comics as well?
That was my dream originally. I was going to be a comic book writer.
Oh, really?
Even when I was a kid. Yeah, my cousin was an artist. And I tried to learn to be an artist when I was younger. I worked really hard at it, actually. But really, I wanted to write comics. So
okay.
That was like the thing. But then when I got a little bit, when I hit right about time I was getting ready to go to college, I realized that comic book writers don't make any money. So, So here's my grand plan. I decided to become a journalist and went to school for journalism.
Oh, okay.
And then I learned that journalists don't make any money. I became a journalist actually originally, and then the thing is it was my really so in my teens and into my right about high school, I started going to raves.
Okay.
And so the whole time I was going to college, I was also going to raves. I got out of college, I became a journalist, but I was also going to raves. And then I covered the whole 9/11 thing just out of college.
Oh,
and
really?
That was devastating on me. So I still went to raves.
Oh, God. And there's no raves in Starlight, though. You said no raves in the book earlier, I
think. Actually there's a reference to a rave at the beginning because one of the characters, Sarah, is a raver. Okay. But she's not just a raver so we can have a raver. There's an arc there, and that's what was important to Brett. So I want to make that clear. Okay. I actually said I wouldn't do the comic if she was a raver, and then Brett was like, no, that's what's important.
Okay.
It really is important because it kind of shapes her as the character, but it also it explains where she comes from and how she's getting there.
Gotcha. So raving, your background as a raver is really what's important to this book.
Not even just raver. My ego is going to cut down. So anyways, I didn't
Travis, are you going to drop
clubs?
He's going to drop his name. The Rave King of the Pacific Northwest. Travis Webb.
It was Webworks. Yeah.
All right. So you did all the raving and you covered 9/11 after you got out of college. And so what happens after that?
So I became a rave promoter and I became a very dominant rave promoter for the Northwest in Seattle. And,
oh, really? So he was being serious.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I started being on the news a lot, and like there was a documentary with me in it. And
what's the documentary?
It's kind of like Tiger King, but with me.
What's it called?
Raves.
I think it's called Victims of Fun, but and
totally
you can find it on YouTube.
That now.
I think it's on YouTube free.
Oh, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah. And so I ended up owning a major venue, and then I am starting a business called Motor in Seattle, which became the dominant rave club in Seattle. And then my raves got so big that we had to move to 5,000 capacity venues. And then I was like, I really want to be a comic book writer. See ya. I sold everything and left.
Really?
I took off to Europe and started traveling around the world with the money.
Uh-huh.
That I'd, saved, and so I sold everything I owned. And I took a boat across the Atlantic to Europe, and then I wandered around Europe for 6 months.
Like Batman.
Yeah, I just wanted they say that you look. I don't know, especially after working in Hollywood, right? I will tell you that good writers are people that have experiences.
Uh-huh.
Not always. But most of the time,
sure.
Right? And I don't know how many screenplays I had to work on coverage for or rate or fix, right, that were written by some actor who grew up in California and went to school with every other actor and everybody else in Hollywood's thing. And it's really just a copy of their version of the same story I've already seen a million times.
Sure.
Because they haven't escaped Hollywood life.
Sure.
I mean, think about how many movies are about a Hollywood writer.
Yeah, sure.
But that's
sure.
such a rare job. So why are there so many movies about it?
Yeah.
And it's because you write what you know. So at that point, I knew how to be a journalist, experienced a huge tragedy twice, actually, because there was another tragedy in 2006, which ended up making international news that I was directly involved with. And then...
Wait, what was that? Which one was that?
That was the Seattle Capitol Hill massacre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
That took a lot out of me. I just had to go experience a different life.
So
I just wandered around Europe forever, came back. And when I got back, I was already kind of tied in to my agent at that point before I left. I'd already set everything up and started making moves down there. So when I came back, it's been comic books ever since. But I will tell you, the first thing my agent told me was, every story you write is going to be 6 issues.
Okay.
I want every story, every arc to end in 6 issues. And I was like, why? And he goes, this is an interesting thing. It converts to screenplay easily.
Mm. Really?
Right. And he said, as a comic book, nobody makes any money.
Yeah.
But as a movie, it will. So if you always plan to and I've gotten a lot of kickback from other people who are in industry for saying this thing, but I'd say that my agent was one of the best in the world.
Okay.
And I can't say who he is anymore because he's not my agent anymore.
Okay.
But he also represents several of the best people in the history of comic books are his clients. Uh-huh. And I would say he was more than likely right about this, which is you write 6 issues so we can convert it to film easily.
Uh-huh.
It also fits into a nice graphic novel size, and it's really easy for him to sell. So since then, I've almost written, I think everything I've ever written has been a 6-issue run.
Okay.
Except for Starlight, which is 7.
Which is 7.
So you're screwing the pooch right out of the can. Like,
Starlight was never meant to be a movie, though. It was always meant to be a comic book since the day we conceived it out of Burning Man on a giant zebra blanketed bed with 3 chicks dressed as genies and the goggles on our heads and me wearing a giant furry owl hat. It's always been a comic book.
Travis is, this is one of the most interesting people I think I've ever had on the podcast at this point. And I'm 300 and something episodes in, and this is amazing. Like, this is a really interesting life story that you're giving me.
Well, it's crazy too, because like Travis and I have had an interlocking path, I guess, because the circles that we ran in, even back in his raving days or his party throwing days and his club management days and owning days and stuff like that, I was going to those events. I was performing at those events.
Oh wow!
And we were always, even back then, crossing paths, but not, we didn't know each other at that point.
Oh, okay.
A weird kind of way. So, as I said before, I was a professional clown, and in that time frame, you get invited to a lot of parties.
Sure.
To be part of whatever's going on, and various things, and then also when at the club that you had, Travis, it was the burlesque scene that was there, and that was
that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. So,
and I was deeply deeply rooted in that as a performer as well. So doing a lot of vaudeville stuff. So there was. So we were constantly intertwined. It's like when we were sitting down, I think we were down at one of our favorite spots in San Diego, just like hanging out, talking, and just eating Italian dinner. And it was like, we started talking about people that we know, and it was like, oh my gosh.
Wow, that's amazing. So what brings you together to sort of make a comic book on Kickstarter? Like what, because Travis has this idea with his, you know, artist friend, and he brings it to you and he wants you to take a look at it, or I think you said fix it or help him with it. So.
Well, So Travis, when Travis and Brett were at Burning Man, I'm like, as soon as they got out, I think like on the way home, he's like, oh my gosh, you'll never believe we were talking about this thing. And I was like, cool, that sounds awesome. And he's like, when I get up, back up to town, we'll hang out and talk about it or whatever. And like, he probably burned the midnight oil, getting through a bunch of renditions of stuff that he had, jotted down. And then we hung out for coffee, and he shoots me over this stack of papers, and he's like, read it and tell me what you think. And I sit down and take a look at it, and we're hanging out and I'm reading it, and I think like near the end of what he's given me, I'm just like, I'm in tears, just like, this is beautiful. This is like, I'm really connected to this story. I think this is something that I think this is really great. And then I think like 6 months later he calls and he's like, Brett and I talked and I'm stuck, and could you help me? And I was like, what? Because that's not the normal conversation that I'm used to having, nor does Travis call me for help.
Sure. And why Greg, Travis? Why Greg out of like all the people that you know? I mean, it doesn't sound to me like, I mean, it sounds like you guys hung out, and am I misreading your relationship? It sounds like you may not have been like, you know, you hung out all the time at this point, or am I wrong about that?
we hung out and talked comics a lot. So we were always at cons together, and we were chatting back and forth about comics. And of course, I read Greg's books and Mike's books because I like them. We were always at cons, and Greg has a similar like for things, and he also had a background in some
experiences,
right? And so
children at raves with superpowers.
I got to be honest, I got scared because I recognized I was doing things that I called other writers out for.
Oh.
Like I was making the mistakes that are the bread and butter to anyone who does consulting.
Sure.
And the thing is when you write a story, and not everyone's like this. So there are writers out there who could just blaze through and write a perfect. I've seen it. It's freaking crazy. Right. Mm-hmm. But there are a common thing is to repeat themes too often in the story because you're afraid you're not getting it across. Another thing is to not get your characters correct in their dialogue. Another thing is to write the same scene in two different places in the book that are the same scene.
Yeah.
These are all things that amateurs do and professionals.
Sure.
And the thing is when you're that close to it, you always read what you think is the best version of what you wrote.
Okay.
And I tried reading backwards. There's another term called killing your babies.
Sure. Oh, yes.
And I knew that there were things that need to go, you know, but I couldn't figure out where they needed to go and how to put things back together without breaking everything because I was too close to the story. I was in the weeds.
Sure. You let me come in with a sledgehammer and just bust the crap out of this thing.
Yeah, he tore out scenes.
So when I was going to school for writing, one of my instructors told me he goes, give it to your mom so she'll read it and tell you it's good, but don't give it to your mom to read it to tell you what's wrong with it. She'll never tell you what's wrong with it. She'll want you to feel good about it. Give it to your friend that's gonna read it and tell you how bad it is. You know, or not bad.
Well, but then how do you deal with that? Because then that's the sort of thing. How do you find the balance? Because you obviously had art teachers who were like, you've got the skills of a kindergartner kid. You know what I mean? So what is the balance between, you know, not to get too much into that conversation, but.
I think the balance is having having that kind of experience happen to me. So I had to have tact in my bag of skill set.
Sure.
And then, you know, I quickly rolled for initiative and charisma, and I rolled nat 20s on those. So I was like, Travis, let's check for traps. And we rolled through it, and we found all the traps. But I was like, you know, one of the things that I think that really helped is that our friendship, even though we're at that time when he threw this to me, we were forming up a pretty good friendship. But I think like now we're like, he's probably one of my best friends, you know, like we hang out pretty much on the regular, despite everything else that's going on in the world.
Sure. Sure.
It's one of those things where it's like, this was one of those opportunities where it's like, all right, cool. Let's do this. And, I can work with you on this, and I could be open and honest with you on this aspect of it because I feel comfortable enough as your friend. And, you know, it's a big trust thing too, you know, on both of our parts, you know, how much does he trust me and how much am I going to, be like, okay, well I can tell you all this and then you're either going to hate me afterwards and never want to be my friend again and you know, never want to hang out or, you know, and do stuff. And that's going to, you know, that's going to be painful because, you know, you don't want to do that. You don't want to like, you know, hurt a friendship and stuff, especially when you got to form up a pretty good friendship and stuff. Through it.
Well, let's talk about the story that you've crafted, because so far we know that there's superhero kids who lost their powers and there's aliens involved. But beyond that, like, what is it that makes Starlight is going to want people to, you know, throw money at it, because that's what we want. Like, Travis has talked a lot about like wanting to avoid sort of like tropes or traps or like that sort of thing. What is it that makes Starlight unique and interesting? I mean, the summary of the plot is really great. And that was sent to me, you know, the idea of like kids superheroes losing their powers and then, you know, having to deal with that. But as Travis said, it's sort of like a spin on the sort of, you know, there's a thing that they've been doing in movies a lot, and Travis spoke to it, where it's like there's a world with super people and there's one person who doesn't have powers. You know what I mean? Like Sky High, or there was something else recently that I watched, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know that by the end that person's going to find out that they're or whatever. But this seems to be sort of like flipping that idea around. Do you want to speak more to that, or?
Oh, definitely. We can do that. We can. It's one of those things where if the idea really talks to people who had varying experiences, like what Travis kind of hit a little bit with his Booster Gold comment. To me, Booster Gold's a guy who had everything at one point in his life and then lost it tragically because of a situation, right?
Because he deserved it.
Because he was a jerk.
Despite that. But he's continually chasing that forever because he needs to get that feeling, right? And sure. I think we try to kind of capture that a bit. A lot of what Sarah goes through, Sarah at the point when she's no longer a superhero is, you know, she becomes a superhero and stops being a superhero at that age. And at 5 years old, that's when you psychologically develop the mindset that this is normal, this is acceptable, and this is what life is like. Right. Mm. Everything around you, this is what it is. And then when all that is gone, it's a shocker to the system. Right. You see a lot. You see that, like you were saying. Yeah. You had mentioned about child stars and things like that in the Hollywood in Hollywood, L.A., where you've got people that are going through that kind of shift and change in their lives and things like that. And they're continually chasing that thing. And that's kind of where we're looking at that aspect of the story. And we think that that's kind of an interesting spin. But then, I mean,
you got Chris.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit older, who was aware of what life was like before he was, you know, 7 or 8. And
are they siblings or just friends?
Oh, yeah. They're brother siblings. And sister.
Okay.
They have a single mother, but no, they're not from a underprivileged family. The mother has some money from their father. Mm-hmm. And Chris grew up believing in the ideal of being a superhero. You know, he's a Nazi puncher.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, you know, like, you don't just stop the villain. You have to stop their ability to continue to terrorize in Chris's eyes.
Sure.
Like, heroes go all the way because that's what it takes. That's why you have a gift of superpowers. You know, and funny story is, both their names kind of sound generic, and that is kind of on purpose. But really, whenever we're working on Chris, I try to imagine Chris Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. You know, a teenage Chris Evans who believes in this. He believes in what it means to be a hero and what it takes.
Yeah.
Where Sarah is the contrast. She just wants to make sure her family and she is okay. And if Chris wants to do this, she'll support him. Because Chris's big brother.
Yeah.
You know, even when they were little, Chris named her, you know, and Chris made the decisions. She went along for the ride because she was 5.
Okay.
You know, and her mind is almost like pretend, like we're superheroes because Chris said so.
Yeah.
You know, big brother said so. So you have two different, now as teenagers, Chris is still all about that superhero life. I mean, like, when he was 13, he probably collected every Marvel and DC trading card there was and has them in a mint box collection.
Sure.
You know? All the cosmic cards.
he probably emails to this day people like Spider-Man saying, hey, my life's doing good. Just seeing how you were doing, you know, can't wait to get back out there with you guys after college.
Yeah.
You know, that's Chris.
Yeah.
You know?
And so is he training still? Like, is he, even if he's lost his powers and stuff, he's doing the Batman thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He is going to be Batman. He is. You know, if he can't be Superman, which is who he was, then he'll be Batman. He'll figure it out.
Sure.
Yeah. He's like the Arrow. He's doing that salmon ladder every day.
Yeah. Oh, God. So painful. Looks horrible.
It does.
The two contrasts, you know, Sarah doesn't know. She's lost.
Yeah,
you know, okay. she doesn't know what it means to be anything but that. And, you know, then we're going to add something else in there real quick. We have Roger, who we haven't talked about.
Oh, yes. Roger.
So
he's everyone's favorite, not favorite.
Oh, man. One of our readers literally messaged me and says, I hate Roger so much. I wish he would die.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was like, I hate him so much. I wish he would die. She wrote that to me in a message. Because we have people that read our stuff, you know, ahead of time, say, hey, look, this is a problem. This was confusing.
Of course.
And she's like, I hate Roger so much. And I'm like, so he's a journalist, right? He's older. He's in his almost 60s. He smokes constantly. He's got the mustache, the glasses.
Yeah.
You know, he's been around the block. And he used to be a network journalist. Now he's a cable TV kind of, you know, tabloid show where he looks up mysteries and conspiracy theories and he hates it.
Yeah,
you know, but just it's a paycheck, getting the check and using his name, because the show, of course, is named after him because he had a reputation once that he's destroyed.
Sure, kind of like Maury Povich or something like that.
Yeah, right. There was a time when he was a respected journalist, and now he's living off his name.
You know?
He's doing the baby daddy thing every week.
Yeah, exactly.
For him, though, he was doing a show where he looks for these weird mysteries around superheroism. You know, it's like a weekly show, and it's on cable. It's probably on the History Channel with the Nazis and the aliens. Uh-huh. But, you know, and so that's the character that they have to save.
Okay.
Like, you have two characters that have to be heroes, and they have someone to save, and we gave them Roger.
And it's not by choice. It's not that they want to. It's that
because
the albatross around their neck.
Okay.
Like, but is he?
Is he like their J. Jonah Jameson or something like that? Or is it?
It'd be like, it'd be like Spider-Man saving J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has to. In fact, he might have to sacrifice himself to save him in that kind of scenarios, you know? Like,
sure.
This, and you don't want to. You know, this guy's just going to be a dick when he gets home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the world probably be better off losing him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could be. Might be.
You know, so you have these two characters, this brother and sister, who are in a situation, and we're like, okay, I can keep them in the city, and I can play the, music builds up as they start rediscovering things, and some mystery unfolds with other superheroes, and you learn there's a dark side, and everyone you think is good is actually bad and has a black dark side. I was like, man, I don't want to do that crap.
Sure.
I'm tired of that. I isolate them, and I put them in outer space.
Mm.
In a spaceship. Now I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to say, you got to save this kind of right-wingy, lying old dude who's a little bit racist and a little bit cruel, and you got to save him and get him back to his family.
Yeah.
Save that aliens. Sour man.
Wow. Well, that sounds cool. Let me ask you a question about the space pirates, because I'm looking at the page right now, and it looks very cool, very cool design. But was there sort of a Fiona Staples sort of saga cat sort of direction that you were going in with this guy? Because he looks like the cat from Saga a little bit.
Talking about the lion cat. I think it's, I think honestly, we're all allergic to cats.
And, Sphinx
is a, no, I'm just joking. But I don't know.
Because the cat looks cool as hell.
Oh, yeah.
That's all Brett, man.
It's all Brett. It's all Brett.
So there was no, like, direction as far as, like, make him look a little bit like this, or we love, like, Fiona Staples stuff, or maybe he just loves it on his own and was doing, like, a slight homage or something?
That's all Brett.
Gotcha.
I like Saga, but I didn't even catch that until you said something. You know, so I guess it is a little bit, but Brett's direction for the cat and the transdimensional spider wizards was eat some mushrooms and then draw. No, I'm kidding. I meant spaghetti.
Spaghetti, mushrooms.
Yeah, sure.
I will tell you this though, like as soon as that first picture, the image went up from Brett about the cats, there was so many messages from people that were like, "What is this project? What are these cats?"
That's awesome.
I want to know about this. How do I get a hold of this cat picture? You know?
Yeah. A lot of people crazy about cats. I mean, I do like a little web comic on my own on the side, and it has cats and people like the cat people. They're a special breed. I love them. They're great. But I'm also allergic to cats as well. So I can't have one in the house.
It's one of those things, like I inherited my mom's cat and when my mom passed away, and this cat loves me. And I have like, I'm like, oh gosh, you're killing me. But
yeah, they seem to gravitate to the person that likes them the least, I think.
Oh, I love the cat. I can't. It's like my time with her is like it. I can feel it in my eyes, my skin.
Yeah.
And you know what it's like. But at the same point, it's like, okay, you know, like you're living a great life. You're living your best life. How old are you? Oh my gosh, you are literally 20 years old.
Yeah.
This cat is so old. I love her.
Wow.
Knock on wood, she sticks around for another 20 years.
Well, is there anything that you guys could say about the aliens in the story at all without spoiling anything? Or
you know, I thought of something, Greg, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Greg, you can tell me if I'm giving away too much, but I wouldn't mind talking about the race of the cat race because they're unique and they're discussed in the book, but I don't think it affects the plot, which is they're
too much. Too much. Yep. Too much.
Space pirate cat.
We're gonna beat that part out.
You know what was a good? What was some art direction is not to make them look so much like the ordinary cat people we see in everyday comics.
Sure,
that was the one thing I gave them.
Okay.
Make them feel original as cat people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
it looks a little cat chihuahua-ish, but yeah. It looks cat cool.
So,
cats go.
All right. So, anyways, the cat race. So they're a pirate race that have existed in the universe for a very long time. They do not make their spaceships. They do not have a home world. They are deeply religious. And the way their race works is as a family grows, like a herd, like a family, like, you know, they have like six kids and then stuff, right? To man the ship. So one ship is one family generation, right? A starship. And then as they come across other starships every so many years, they don't constantly run into other starships because space is big, really big. but when they run into other ships, what they'll do is they'll commandeer the other ship. And then the eldest male of the family's that's not the father, the captain of the current ship, gets that ship and takes his pride with him.
Oh,
and then they never see each other again.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
And it begins to be pride in a new ship. So that's their, and they have all these little songs and prayers they're taught for all the years they're in deep space. But they don't, there's no home world for them. Their race has been around so long, right, that their home world is a myth in their songs and in their prayers.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's awesome. That sounds badass. That's really cool. Well, gentlemen, you know, I've had you on for an hour, and I appreciate your time. But this project looks awesome. I definitely was sucked in from, you know, just the description that you sent me via Twitter, which I never look at or hardly ever look at. I'm so old. I just hate social media so much. I can't stand it. But I loved what you sent me. And then, you know, the Kickstarter page itself is fantastic. And again, everyone should go to Kickstarter. You should look up Starlight, LITE. Do you guys have Twitter pages or places that people can go to check, you know, your stuff out besides this?
Go ahead, Greg.
You're better at this part. You can go check out That Amazing Twit on Twitter, GK Wordsmith on Twitter, and That Amazing Twit on Instagram, and Starlight on Twitter, and Starlight on Instagram.
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah, well, and was that your handles too, Travis? Or
yeah, we also have at Starlight Comic on Facebook as well.
Okay,
and I'm just Travis R. Webb on Facebook personally.
Okay.
But I think I might be at the max for friends, so it's probably better to because of my past.
Oh, ooh, la di da.
Yeah, I've maxed it a couple times. And I have to go back and clean it back down, but we'll see. But yeah. So, but the Starlight Facebook is our big thing. And there's a really fun video on starlightcomicbook.com. There's a video about us.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then the easiest way to find us on Kickstarter is actually starlightkickstarter.com.
Yep.
Oh, awesome. That's awesome. Well, cool. Well, guys, I really wish you the best with this book. Thank you for coming on to my podcast. Thank you for slumming it on my podcast. You guys have had like very interesting lives and experiences, but I appreciate your time. And, you know, this looks great. I can't, you know, say enough about it. It's always great to come across like a really unique and interesting project in comics. So I wish you guys nothing but the best.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. You know, again, this is a part-time fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. Please go to Kickstarter and look up Starlight, Starlite. I have had the creators of this project, Travis Webb and Gregory. I'm going to use Gregory again because I don't know why. I'm just stuck to it. Gregory K. Smith. Just throw money at their Kickstarter because it looks and sounds great. So, you know, I can't say enough. And once again, thank you for joining me. And this has been Part-Time Fanboy. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which I never check. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And again, I'm Christian Horn, and thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-time.